Excellent. Good morning. Our reading today is from Exodus 3 to 4:17, and we're starting at page 59 in the Church Bible if you would want to read along with me. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that the bush was on fire. It did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, Here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Moses said to God, Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, The God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, What is his name? Then what shall I tell him? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, Say to the Israelites, The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation. Go, assemble the elders of Israel and say to them, The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, appeared to me and said, I have watched over you and have seen what has been done to you in Egypt. And I have promised to bring you up out of your misery in Egypt into the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey. The elders of Israel will listen to you. Then you and the elders are to go up to the king of Egypt and say to him, The Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. Let us take a three-day journey into the wilderness to offer sacrifices to the Lord, our God. But I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless a mighty hand compels him. So I will stretch out my hand and strike the Egyptians with all the wonders that I will perform among them. After that, he will let you go. And I will make the Egyptians favorably disposed towards this people, so that when you leave, you will not go empty-handed. Every woman is to ask her neighbor and any woman living in her house for articles of silver and gold and for clothing, which you will put on your sons and daughters, and so you will plunder the Egyptians. Moses answered, What if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, The Lord did not appear to you? Then the Lord said to him, What is that in your hand? A staff, he replied. The Lord said, Throw it on the ground. Moses threw it on the ground and it became a snake, and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, Reach out your hand and take it by the tail. So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake, and it turned back into a staff in his hand. This, said the Lord, is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you. Then the Lord said, Put your hand inside your cloak. So Moses put his hand into his cloak, and when he took it out, the skin was leprous. It had become as white as snow. Now put it back into your cloak, he said. So Moses put his hand back into his cloak, and when he took it out, it was restored, like the rest of his flesh. Then the Lord said, if they do not believe you or pay attention to the first sign, they may believe the second. But if they do not believe these two signs or listen to you, take some water from the Nile and pour it on the dry ground. The water you take from the river will become blood on the ground. Moses said to the Lord, pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. The Lord said to him, who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. But Moses said, pardon your servant, Lord, please send someone else. Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses, and he said, what about your brother, Aaron the Levite? I know he can speak well. He is already on his way to meet you, and he will be glad to see you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth. I will help both of you speak and will teach you what to do. He will speak to the people for you, and it will be as if he were your mouth and as if you were God to him. But take this staff in your hand so that you can perform the signs with it. Father God, we thank you for your word. We thank you that you're here with us by your spirit, and we thank you for Nathan as he's coming to bring what he's prepared to us today. I pray that you'll open our hearts and minds to everything that you want us to learn about you and about how you feel towards us. In Jesus' name, amen.
Wonderful. That passage that Josh just read so well is, you can't say one bit of the Bible is more important than any other bit because it's all inspired by God, but it is a key passage, one of the key passage upon which so many other parts of the Bible hang. And so we are going to have a treat looking at that. Before we do that, I want to ask, do you have a bucket list? Do you have a list of things that you want to do before you die? You can buy books and books, can't you? Our culture is quite goal-orientated. I've got books and books. I read them about setting your goals and, you know, achieving your ambitions. I'm in the running club in the village, and James, the chairman there, is very keen on you. Set your goals and you go for it. Lovely, lovely guy. We're going to have a little think about goals and ambition. Last week, we talked about the game Wordle, where you have the right word, but it can be in the wrong place, or the right word in the right place. And a good goal in the right direction, the right goal in the right direction, is a good thing. But the right goal in the wrong direction is a bad thing. Let me give you an example. Imagine I am playing football. So I like to play for the Shinfield Vets. I'm not very good. They tolerate me. And every week, my aim is to score a goal. That's my secret aim, is to score a goal. I want to go home feeling I've put one in the back of the net. But imagine if my goal was secretly, I don't mind which net it goes in, as long as it goes in the back of the net. And I think, oh, my goal's, my own goal's undefended. I'll pop one in. I put it in and I'm cheering and shouting and going, yes, I've scored. Right goal, wrong direction. And I'm happy, but my team are absolutely livid. It would be ridiculous. Well, actually, I think that's many of your goals, many of my goals in life are like that. They're the right goals, but they're in the wrong direction. So many of your goals and my goals about you and me being successful in life. So we might have as our slogan, I am who I will make myself to be. I am who I will make myself to be. That is our goal-orientated culture. Grab a goal, go for it, make yourself feel good, do something in life. And many Christians, even many Christian conferences that you go to, effectively that will be the message. Underneath all the Bible passages and all the layers, that is the message. What's wrong with that? We're going to explore that. Some people say, no, fine, Nathan, I'm not one of those. Don't you worry. I don't have any goals in life. I'm easy. You know me? I'm relaxed. I look on, I never say anything, but I look on and just, you know, a bit of scoffing inside at people who chase after this, because me, I'm chilled. But actually, you do have little ambitions. You don't want to stay healthy. You want to stay all right. You want to stay okay with your friends. You kind of want a career that's all right. You don't want to push yourself too far. And that's just the same as having goals. Because in a way, you wouldn't say you've got goals, but you've got a daydream of life's ambition, a daydream list. And this talk's called freedom. And so what we're looking at is how can you get the right goals in the right direction? Because this will destroy you. That will ignore all the talk in all the conferences and all the books. That will destroy you. We're going to look at how you meet with God, how he gives you goals that will build you up, not only build you up, but build the world up and will make you free. And we've only got 20 minutes to do it in. So let's see how we get on. Andy, can I have that slide? Let's just recap a bit of the history. If you weren't here last week, Moses was an Israelite. The Israelites are an immigrant community in Egypt. They're oppressed. The Egyptians, the majority, fear them. Moses' mother, instead of killing him, as she's meant to do, because he's an Israelite boy, that was the Pharaoh's order, hides him in a basket. You may know the story, it's quite famous, and puts him in a river, and he's found by an Egyptian princess who brings him up in the palace. One day, Moses wants to see the Israelites and what's really happening. He knows he's an Israelite at heart. He goes out, he sees an Israelite being brutally treated by a slave driver, and he kills the slave driver, and he's found out, and he has to run. And he runs, this is Egypt, he runs to Midian. Just by the way, no one knows exactly where some of the places in the Bible are. That's not because the Bible's not accurate. If you know your ancient and classical history, you'll know many place names. We're never quite sure exactly where they are. But Midian's roughly here on the northern part of the Red Sea. So there's Moses. And here, Moses meets with God in a bush that's on fire. A bush on fire wouldn't be anything too stupendous in the desert, because obviously very strong heat, you do get fires, natural fires. And but a bush burning, but still fresh beneath the fire, grabs his attention. Now, is God grabbing your attention? Maybe you don't really know God yet, but there's things going on. There's experiences you're having, people you're meeting, maybe good things happening to you, maybe difficult things happening to you, maybe supernatural things happening to you. Is God grabbing your attention? Maybe you're already a Christian, maybe you already follow Jesus, but there may be things going on, dreams, visions, supernatural events, coincidences. Can I tell you, whether you're a believer or not a believer, if that's happening to you, it's not an accident. It's God speaking to you. He's grabbing your attention. Shall I tell you, the top thing to do is do what Moses does. Go over and have a look. God is grabbing your attention. So Moses meets with God. Of all the meetings with God before the birth of Jesus Christ in the Bible, this one is the most significant. Because God reveals his name. God says, I am who I am. That in Hebrew is translated as Yahweh. I am who I am. We're going to look at the difference between I am who I will make myself to be and I am who I am. God, when you meet with him, reveals who you are. Isn't that interesting? God shows you who you are. There's been some research by political writer Georgia Gould, young writer, not a Christian, exploring the way how our current culture seems to simultaneously both create opportunity for young people and destroy them at one and the same time. It creates opportunity because young people now have the resources before them to do far more, just looking at roughly the age here, far more than probably most of us ever had in our youth. The internet, social media, the ability to connect, the power that they have. And if you can harness it, you can do really well. Just think Mark Zuckerberg, head of one of the world's most profitable companies, was doing that in his 20s. And if you do succeed, and young people do feel this, Gould says they do feel the pressure to succeed, you can feel good because you say, I have made myself. I have done it. But you only feel good for a little while because social media can put people who've done that bit better than you. You can see how everyone's done, which is great in some ways. But there's always someone who's done better than you. I remember someone who had a really big house, talking about his house, another person talking about their house, and saying, oh, you always wanted a bigger house, don't you? So young people are under huge pressure. They feel proud if they've done well. Then they feel destroyed when they don't feel quite they've done quite as well as somebody else. But what about those who don't make it at all? They feel destroyed because the pressure in today's society is you are who you make yourself to be. It's your success if you succeed, but it's your failure if you fail. So some of us will say, well, the answer to that, you know what the answer to that is, don't you? The answer is to be true to yourself. What does that mean, be true to yourself? I was watching a program by Muhammad about Muhammad Ali. Whole series, BBC iPlayer, if you want to watch it, love it. And Muhammad Ali, who used to say, I am the greatest. There's two parts to Muhammad Ali, when he was the greatest, and then, of course, when he begins to get ill and he loses many of his powers. Obviously, he has Parkinson's disease. What happened? I didn't know this. When Muhammad Ali, when the effects of Parkinson's began to have more and more impact on him, he changed. He actually inwardly repented. He repented of cheating. He was a serial cheater on his wives. He repented of the way that he was. Some of it was gamesmanship. Some of you, if you play sport, you'll be into a little gamesmanship. But he was cruel to some of his opponents, Joe Frazier being one of them. And he repented of that. And he told his children the real religion, the true religion, is to be good to everyone and true to yourself. Sounds great. Our society loves that. Our culture loves that. But what does that mean? Because which is the true Muhammad Ali? Is it the one that says, I am the greatest? And succeeds by gamesmanship? That was part of his game as well as his brilliant boxing. Or is it the humbler, repentant Ali in his later years? Which one's true? And aren't you and I like that? We're kind until it's really difficult to be kind. Who's ever lost their rag? If you've got children or if you're married or in a friendship or relationship and you get a bit cross with the kids because you're tired and they're tired and I'm tired, and afterwards you put them to bed and think, oh, I wish I was a better dad. What about we're generous until we think, well, I've given enough now. That's it. We're loving until we meet someone mean. Are we true to ourselves then? How true are we? God says, I am who I am. It means that God is not what he does. Look at this. I will make. It's the future. This is the present. I am who I am. There's nothing about doing there. God is just God. God is the only being who is true to himself. And you say, well, how do you know he's true to himself? Very easy for God to come down in a nice cloud, burning bush, throw a staff on the floor, turn it into a snake, stick your hand into the shirt, it comes out leprous. Easy if you're God. Being true to yourself. How do we know he's true to himself? Well, he proved it by coming down in the form of a human being in Jesus. Nobody or few people would say go around saying, I'm really true to myself. Some people might. They might think it inside, but very few people would say it. Why? Because it's so easy to disprove. Imagine if I said to you, guys, my sermon this morning, be true to yourself, like me. There you go. You laugh. Okay, you shouldn't have laughed quite that loud, but you know. But you would. Jesus is one of the few people who has said, I am who I am. He was talking to some religious leaders, and Jesus said, before Abraham is Moses' descendant, before Abraham was born, I am. The Pharisees, the religious leaders, knew that Jesus was effectively saying that I am God. He was using this slogan. They were so mad, they got rocks ready to kill him. Who was Jesus? Why did he come? Let's look at this passage a bit more. In that passage, you see God calling Moses to bring freedom to the Israelites. God has heard their groan. He really cares. Let's not over-spiritualize this passage. There's people being whipped and beaten. They're hungry and they're starving. He cares. He cares for the situation in Ukraine. So glad that George mentioned those different countries in Africa that slip under the news radar. He cares. He cares for people you know about who are suffering. He really, really cares. Let's look at that a bit more widely. The world is groaning, isn't it? You can turn on the news and hear it groan. And sometimes you say, why doesn't somebody do something? It's groaning. Let me tell you something. Did you know some of the world's groans are because of you and me? Do you know what, like you're thinking, oh yeah, if only so-and-so, they didn't do that. If only that person in my workplace. If only my family member. If only my neighbour. Do you know sometimes they're saying that about you? Why? Because you're not perfect. Because I'm not perfect. Don't your lying, your cheating, your bitterness, your jealousy, your rudeness, your lewdness, your infidelity, your pornography, your laziness, your anger, your violence, Bible calls them sins. Don't people groan out because of you? The world groans out to God, the destruction of it. Your sins, my sins, the world groans. Sometimes wouldn't you like to shed your skin as well? Aren't there things about yourself and you think, I just want to get rid of that. I can't shake it. I want to get rid of it. Wouldn't you like to have a new start sometimes? God sends Jesus to liberate the world just as he sends Moses to liberate the Israelites. Jesus proves he's the only human being who's ever been true to himself. He carries out perfectly the goal assigned to him, showing people a new way to live, teaching, healing, caring, loving God with all his heart and mind and soul and strength and those around him as he loves himself. Even to the ultimate test, to death itself. He never flinches from being true to himself. He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. And then when he's dying and people are killing him cruelly, he says, Father, forgive them for they don't know what they do. He loves to the end. And when he dies on the cross, he carries the penalty for all the wrongdoing of the world. Your wrongdoing, your wrong thoughts, the things that make other people groan and the things that make the world groan. And he's punished for all of those. He who's done no wrong, the only one true to himself, is punished. And then he rises again, demonstrating that the oppression that comes from sin is gone. It's gone. You're free from it. I'm free from it. If we choose to take on the liberation of God, we are free forever. You step out of this, which is a heavy burden, I'll tell you, and you step into this, which is as light as a feather. The revelation transforms Moses and it has the power to transform you because God himself is totally free. He has no need to do anything to show off. He has no need to do anything to prove himself. This is quite personal, isn't it? I am who I am. It's totally personal. It's about being. The moment you step towards God, you become free. Moses will see he becomes free as he gets closer to God. You begin to take on his wholeness and his integrity. Notice Moses' first reply. Moses, Moses. What does Moses say? Here I am. Moses is already beginning to be free as he meets with God. And Moses is given a goal. Go, I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people out of Egypt. And that's a bit confusing because early on, Nathan, you were saying we shouldn't have goals. Right, goal, wrong direction, scoring in your own net, all that type of thing. But what's different is the goal isn't about Moses. The goal isn't about Moses getting his identity through fulfilling it. Look, let me show you what I mean. A little earlier, I said I always like to score a goal when I play. By the way, just so you know, I don't always score a goal when I play. And when I do score a goal, it's usually a tap-in or a goal-mouth fumble, sort of a la Gary Lineker, if you remember him, but with none of the frequency or grace. But imagine, actually, that goal, what about if that was the right goal? The goal could be exactly the same, but was in the right direction. Imagine if instead of now scoring that goal, for me to be fulfilled, imagine if actually what I'm thinking is, yes, I really want to score because I'm a striker and if I score, my team will win. actually, the reason I want to score is I want to serve my team. If I don't score, I'll let them down. Right goal, right direction. I'm no longer wanting to score for myself. I'm wanting to score for my team. God begins to give you goals, but they're going away from you, as it were. They're not about you. They're not about you. They're about others. So in fulfilling Moses' purpose, Moses becomes freer. We've already said last week, Moses is a rescue dog. He loves to help people. He's really passionate. He really cares about justice. If you follow his story through, he really cares about people. What's he been doing for all these years? He's been caring for sheep. God's now going to liberate him to be who he really meant to be, and he's going to give him people to liberate and to care for. As God meets with Moses and Moses meets with God, God begins to release and enable Moses to become who he really is. It's a really strange thing. The more Moses becomes less about himself and more about God, the more Moses really becomes Moses and who he's meant to be. Here I am. Isn't that strange? Moses' goals are God's, not his. And also, God's going to help Moses. He's going to do all the signs and wonders. Could Moses turn a stick into a snake? No. Could Moses make his hand leprous? No. God's going to do it. So Moses can't get proud. When he does liberate the Israelites, he can't say, I've done it. He can't start running his YouTube influencer channel and say, this is how you liberate people from oppression and slavery. Here's my book. I'm at these conferences. I'm available. Only gigs of 20,000 or less. He can't do that because it's all done by God. Okay, and that brings us to God's anger. Did you notice that? What did you think about that? God being angry. Ooh. It says God's anger burned against Moses after Moses said, please send someone else. Now, I always felt that that meant, when I read that passage, God absolutely erupted. Fire and brimstone, Moses is trembling. But I think something else is going on here. Because God is true to himself, the things that make God angry will always make him angry. He doesn't say, oh, Barry, he's a nice guy. He did the wrong thing, so I'm not going to get angry with that. But Nathan, I don't like him so much. He's not such a nice guy, so I'm going to get really angry. He doesn't do that. Bunny, isn't she lovely? I'm not going to get angry when she does the wrong things. She's so nice. No, if Barry and Bunny do wrong things, she's going to get angry in the same way I do them, because he's true to himself. And there's a number of reasons why God is angry. God is liberating Moses. He's setting him a noble goal that will help him become more the person he's made to be. He's angry at Moses' stupidity and self-destructiveness, just as we're angry when children do something that's deliberately going to harm themselves. He's also rightfully angry that Moses is lying. It says later in the Bible that Moses had been trained in all the eloquence of the Egyptians. May not have been the best speaker, but he was certainly better than he was making out. When God asks you to do something, you get it downplaying your skill? Oh, I can only do tap-ins, God. I don't score that many goals, you know. I'm only joking. But we can downplay our skill, can't we? We can downplay our skill because we don't want to do the job, actually. So it's still about us. Moses is moving, God's moving him away. The Lord says, who gave human beings their mouth? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight? Who makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go. I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. But I wonder if the thing that makes God most angry, and rightfully so, is Moses' self-centeredness. Again, we mustn't spiritualize this passage. God cares for the thousands of Israelites who are brutally oppressed and wants Moses to lead them to freedom, and all Moses can care about is himself. Isn't God right to be angry? It's not about you, Moses. Stop being so stupid and cowardly. Start having a bit more ambition. Pick up my purposes, my goals. Now, God's anger is not like human anger. God controls it. He is angry, but he doesn't lash out. He says, look, I'm going to be really generous to you. I'm going to send Aaron to help you. And off Moses goes. I believe God's anger sometimes burns at your lack of generosity and my lack of generosity. Our society is so selfish. That is such a weight as well. That will destroy you. You'll spend your life trying to fulfill your goals. You get to the end of your life and think, did that make me feel fulfilled? No. Because to be fulfilled, you need to find yourself in God and take on his purposes, which are far greater than you, and you'll be free as you do so. Very, very briefly, let's talk practically. If God's calling you, go over. If you're a believer or a non-believer, if he's doing strange things in your life, go over. Start talking to him. Be free and fruitful. We said it's not bad to have a goal, but start grabbing hold of God's goals. God's goals will be less about you. Well, in fact, they won't be about you. They'll be about other people. But in doing them, you'll become free. You'll become the right person. What's God calling you to do? Who's he calling you to help? It doesn't have to be thousands. It can be one, two, three people. If you think you're valuable and need care and love, you're right. And so therefore, when you help somebody else, you're showing them value, care and love. You're called, like Moses, like Jesus even. I didn't come to be served, but to serve. And for those of you who are smug, sitting there thinking, oh, good job, I'm not one of those goal-getters, you know. I'm fine, I'm off the hook here. No, you are not off the hook. You lack ambition. You're far too content. And actually, you need to be grabbing hold of one of the goals of God. You actually probably need to be thinking, actually, God's made me, God's created me, not for myself, but for others. But in serving others, I'll be more myself than I ever, ever was. And you need to look up a little bit. And you need to grab hold of God. There's so much more to say from that passage, but we can't go into that. We've run out of time. There's stuff there about God teaching Moses to live in the desert very practically. God prepares you practically for your task. God's going to lead the Israelites through the desert for 40 years. So he teaches him how to live in the desert. Egypt, by the way, if you've been to Egypt, the bits where they live isn't desert. It's by the Nile. You've got water all the time. God's helping Moses culture humility as a shepherd. You know, I'm just a shepherd. I was a prince, now I'm a shepherd. But I'm finding contentment in that, living with my wife and kids. God's giving him humility, just like Christ identifies with us. God's giving him time, actually, to invest in his marriage with Zipporah. It's really important to invest in your marriage if you're married. Their marriage is going to be put through some big tests when Moses is leading, but it stays strong all the way through. Sally Ann and I, we had a very quick engagement. And so in the first couple of years of our marriage, we thought, we won't have children straight away. What we'll do is we'll just get to know each other a bit more. So we'd go out every weekend. Sounds great. Every Saturday night, we'd make sure we go somewhere, do something. And actually, we lived off that. When the children arrive, things get busy. And we invested in. Can I encourage you to invest in your marriage? But the key message here is meet with God. When you meet with God, you will be free. It was for freedom that Christ has set us free. Jesus said, when the Son of Man sets you free, you'll be free indeed. So everything, all those weights, slip off. Come unto me, all who are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. For my burden is easy and my yoke is light, says Jesus. Let me pray. Then I'm going to ask Angela to share, because Angela is just telling me a little story that links quite closely to this passage. I thought it would be really encouraging to hear that. God, there's a big message. It's totally countercultural. This idea, I am who I am, totally flies in the face of where we are today. Yet there's some truth in some of the things we think, but they're the wrong things. They're the right things, often in the wrong direction. I pray that we meet with you, the living God, and be free. Amen. Andrew, come and share.
Thanks. Yes, I shared this with the elders when we met earlier this week, and it did seem to just fit. So earlier this week, I was listening to an interview, well, it's more of a conversation, really, between two very well-known Christian women. One was a lady called Christine Kane, who's Australian and was originally part of the Hillsong movement, is now living in America, in California. And the other was Pippa Gumbel. You probably have heard of the Alpha movement, and Nick Gumbel is the leader of the Alpha movement and a vicar of Holy Trinity Brompton, and he is married to Pippa. And they were talking about a conversation they'd had a few years previously when Christine Kane had challenged Pippa and said, "Why aren't you doing more?" Well, I can imagine that Pippa Gumbel was a very busy lady, married to somebody like Nikki, and very busy in her church, having brought up children, and I should think, well, if I had been her, I think I'd have been a bit fronted. And she did say she felt rebuked. But she pondered on it, and she said, you know, it was what she needed to hear. because what she then was able to do was to step up and take her place co-leading with Nikki. And we know the impact that they as a couple have had in the world, because she did not sort of dismiss Christine's comment, but pondered it and thought about it. And what Christine said to her was, until you take your place, others can't take theirs. And that was the phrase that really resonated with me. Until you take your place, others can't take theirs. Because if you're not doing your job, then somebody else is probably having to cover it. And perhaps they're trying to do the job that God's asked them to do, and they're also trying to cover yours, and they're probably not doing either terribly well. And they're probably getting absolutely worn out trying to do it. And also, if you're not stepping into your place, then maybe somebody can't move into where you are. You're a bit like a bed blocker. You know, they've got the goals, the gifts that God has given them to move into that place, but you're blocking it because you're not willing to move into the place that God has for you. So that's what I wanted to share. It really resonated with me. Until you take your place, others can't take theirs. And if you don't know what your place is, then talk to somebody, talk to Nathan, talk to one of the elders, talk to somebody in the church and find out what it is.
Thanks, Angela.